Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
All right, let's talk now about how smartphones, and specifically all those apps for those smartphones, are changing the way we live.
What's great about the iPhone is that if you want to check snow conditions on the mountain, there's an app for that. And if you want to check where exactly you parked the car, there's even an app for that. Yep, there's an app for just about anything.
Yeah, just about anything. And since that iPhone ad came out in 2009, smartphone apps have multiplied. And they now not only provide reams of information, but they also help deliver things right to your door. Groceries, booze, ice cream, clothes, handymen, cars, and in San Francisco, medical pot. It's all available at the touch of a button.
It sounds like a whole new world of convenience, but it's actually the second rise of on-demand delivery services. Many companies, including Cosmo and Webvan, were among a series of delivery startups that failed in the tech boom and then crash of the early 2000s. So what's going on now? And is this new little boomlet in delivery services sustainable?
John Dayton has been thinking a lot about that. He's a professor of business administration at Harvard Business School. He also wrote a case study on Webvan, one of those delivery companies that failed more than a decade ago. And welcome to Radio Boston. Good to have you.
Thanks a lot. Good to be here.
So let's start with those startups like Webvan and why it failed in the early 2000s. So first, remind us, first of all, what Webvan was and what it was trying to do.
I think of Webvan as the Titanic of my age. No one actually drowned, although a lot of people were underwater. It was a brief 2.5 year experiment with massive investment in infrastructure to make the our everyday life, the life off the web, benefit from some of the advantages of the web and the digitization.
Mm.
Not a great idea, as it turned out, because that very large investment, it was a $2 billion contract signed with Bechtel to build warehouses. These warehouses were colossal, and they really didn't generate the demand.
I see. And so, I mean, what did Webvan hope to deliver? What were they out to do?
Webvan was going to deliver you your groceries whenever you wanted them, within windows that would be delivered to your house. Mm. Great idea. Turns out people kind of like supermarkets.
Yeah. And this idea of warehouses full of food and delivery trucks and cars, what was the essential puzzle that its founders couldn't figure out? I mean, why did it fail?
It failed very simply because it couldn't get enough people to subscribe to the service to warrant the volume of delivery that could happen. These warehouses, one was in fact built, and it was capable of delivering 3 million grocery deliveries a year. Turns out there just weren't that many people wanting their deliveries, their groceries delivered. Hmm. The issue kind of crystallized in the last leg of the journey.
Mm-hmm.
So the warehouse could pick. It was automatic digital picking of groceries, terrifically efficient. It could deliver them to hubs. That was pretty efficient. But then little trucks picked them up and took them to your house.
So it was sort of like the last mile or two.
You could call it the last mile, the last 5 miles.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
And so that didn't work.
It couldn't get enough concentration of people who wanted that to happen.
All right. So we're hearing now about a second boomlet. Megan and I sort of made reference to that, of these kinds of companies. I was reading the New York Times recently about companies with names like Caviar, Spoon Rocket, and DoorDash. They're hoping to jump into this delivery business and profit from the idea or willingness of people to pay for this sort of stuff. How are these companies different then from Webvan? What's going on?
Maybe the way into that question is to say, how is Webvan different from Amazon?
Yeah.
Amazon started about the same time. Amazon started with a particular product, in a way the perfect product, books, tremendously large assortment, very hard to keep in one place, but easy to keep in a warehouse. And it left the delivery problem to somebody else. Essentially, that was a FedEx UPS problem. That grew in the same time. Well, it survived beyond the death of Webvan and went on to the point now where the number of things they sell is much larger, and the proportion of the deliveries that are happening with direct action on the part of Amazon is increasing. So they've slowly crept into what I think of as the customer-facing end of the channel. Mm-hmm. WebBand tried to, in almost in USSR military style, tried to build the entire supply chain. Amazon said, let's start at the profitable end, which is where the retail margins are, and slowly increment down to what I think we have to agree is the unprofitable end.
Yeah, I see.
So when I look at Uber or the experiments of the names you mentioned, I wonder why they're entering the business at the end that we all kind of understand doesn't make money.
Hmm. And what do you think the answer to that is? I mean, it's a good question, but mm-hmm. why do you think they are entering it?
Well, firstly, this is the great opportunity that remains untapped. I mean, we've in a sense disrupted all of the digital industries that are around. We destroyed music, we destroyed books, we destroyed classified ads and newspapers along the way. Now we're starting to hit the physical stuff. Mm-hmm. And of all the physical things, I think groceries and the things that we get in our cars, if you ask people to code what they do when they get into their car, I'd say, number one, they commute. Number two, they do errands. And they're saying, maybe we can stop people doing all these errands.
And isn't one of the sort of key differences that's going on today with some of these newer companies is they're taking advantage of the sort of shared economy? That is, rather than building warehouses, buying trucks, and having dedicated drivers. I mean, for instance, you mentioned Uber. So Uber Fresh is experimenting with a grocery delivery service out in San Francisco.
Right.
So they're using essentially the Uber taxi driver model, not having dedicated drivers and trucks and warehouses to get this delivery service done.
Yeah, that's very true. So there's an enormous amount of unutilized idle resource, mm-hmm. both the cars that people own that sit idle and, in many cases, the human capital. So thanks to the social web, it's now possible to mobilize those idle resources. And then on the consumer side, you can click to these services through an app. You can be given price quotes, and you can pay for the services. So we've made things kind of easy to do and to coordinate. But the question in my mind is, have we taken enough cost out of the system that didn't work when its brand name was Cosmo?
I see, yeah.
Cosmo was another famous calamity of the first dot-com bubble. We're now living, of course, in the second dot-com bubble. And the question is, who's going to survive?
Do you see companies, I mean, does this model, I mean, let's stick with this Uber Fresh model, does this solve that problem of how to make that last 5 or 10 miles profitable?
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I think the money that Uber hopes to make will be in essentially managing stores. So they plan to make margin the old-fashioned way, buy cheap and sell expensive, and they're going to throw delivery in as a way to build volume to the point where they can deliver those groceries from their own facilities. At the moment, many of these companies are operating out of the back of existing facilities, and clearly there is no saving. Clearly, yeah. This is a waiting to get to scale kind of situation.
And what does it take to get to scale? Because this is the term that you read about in the challenge here. I mean, I'm trying to imagine what it would have taken WebVan to get to scale. I mean, is it a question of every city in America? What has to happen to make these companies profitable in terms of getting to scale?
The answer is that we as consumers have to start to become interested in making significant parts of our purchase patterns online.
Yeah.
It's not a fill-in purchase. It's not, gosh, I'm out of diapers. Let's try that new free service. Yeah. This is putting our routine purchases onto the web with interfaces that simplify the shopping list and then allow someone to fill those orders efficiently. And then comes the real opportunity, which is the data that is being revealed in those individual level customer histories that are accumulating. And that's why Google and Amazon are seriously in this business.
Right.
It's harder for me to understand why Uber is there unless the taxi business just isn't as exciting as it as it seemed to be.
Yeah, thinking about a company like Uber Fresh with Uber, you know, essentially a grocery delivery service. So once upon a time, I experimented with Peapod. I used that, I think, exactly once. And I couldn't stand it. And this isn't anything necessarily, this isn't a slam necessarily on Peapod. It's just an expression of my personal preference. When I shop for food, I want to see the food I'm buying. I want to touch the food I'm buying. I want to actually interact with the people who are selling the food. So for a grocery delivery delivery company, I have a hard time imagining that working on a huge long on a huge scale, getting to scale just for that reason. I mean, that's my personal bias.
Fortunately for Peapod, there are a small number of people who like the service.
Yeah.
So Peapod began at essentially the same time as Webvan. It still exists. It's a pretty healthy business, operating out of the back of supermarkets. By my estimation, it very rarely gets more than about 5% of any suburb that it operates in. Mm-hmm. So that means, you know, you're talking about the fringe, the eccentric fringe, and you're clearly not one of that 5%.
When you first started teaching the case study about the failure of Webvan to your students, what was their reaction?
Well, I wrote the case, as it were, as the Titanic was leaving on its maiden voyage. Mm. So nobody really was looking for the flaws.
Yeah.
No one had the iceberg on the radar. But within a year, it had failed. Companies like Goldman Sachs and Sequoia Capital had their investments disappear. They may have gotten out in time, I don't know. But by that point, everyone had a theory of why it had failed. And the case became less interesting as a teaching device. What's happened, somewhat to my surprise, is in the last year or so, with this flood of activity in the delivery end of the business, people have come back and said, why don't we just look at Webvan again and see exactly where it went wrong?
Interesting. So what's your advice to your students who think about getting into the delivery end of this business?
I say, stay away from the delivery end. Mm-hmm. It's the grunt work end of the business. I say go upstream to the retail end and operate there. Interestingly, a company called Ship, that's Ship with a Y, as you might expect, was launched yesterday, and Ship essentially puts us all in the delivery business. That's not a bad end to be in.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you can get scale quickly. But delivering me my cup of tea in the morning is no way to make a living.
All right. Well, that's John Dayton. He's a professor of business administration at Harvard Business School. John Dayton, thank you so much for coming in and talking about this. Very interesting.
It's a pleasure.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station.
Our show is produced by Amory Sievertson, Alex Kingsbury, Emma Jean Weinstein, Kathleen McNerney, and Tim Skog is our technical director.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.